Welcome to Business Watch. The commodity run of the past 2 years has certainly paid off in spades for South Africa. The rand has remained improbably strong, while South Africa's fiscus has benefited from an overall revenue overrun of almost 300 billion rand, and S&P upgraded its outlook as a result. It's a windfall that has allowed the authorities to loosen monetary policy to some extent and raise government spending, allowing the country to recover faster from the pandemic than many thought possible initially. But analysts are starting to become a little more skittish, pointing to the fact that prices had risen so high that a fall seemed inevitable. They say the only cure for high prices is high prices. Over the last year, for example, platinum has fallen 21%, palladium 24.3%, and iron ore 24%. And while gold has actually risen just above 5%, peaking above $2,000 an ounce at one point, it has dipped a little bit over the last month, currently around $1,840 an ounce. But if you hold firm that we're entering an era of scarcity and the sort of capital discipline that's been a hallmark of the recent commodity run continues, then I think there's little reason to think that the commodities party is over. Well, with that in mind, we've assembled our trio of hard and soft pickers for this month's share shootout. Greg Cutts and Alan Birkin, Director at Sunland Private Wealth, Carolyn Crimmin, Portfolio Manager at AdviceWorks, and Nick Kunzer, Portfolio Manager at Sunland Private Wealth. Carolyn, first out the blocks with Boring Billiton, and that's not a bad drilling joke. The granddaddy has undergone some rather major changes recently. Just tell me about these and what do you like about Boring Billiton.
Okay, well, the fact is, it is boring. I mean, you've just said that probably the massive growth that we've seen is over. So, and it's a really volatile and dangerous stock exchange out there, as we know. And in times like this, you actually want to be in a company which has got a really, really good management, number one. And number two, in a slow growth period for stocks, you want dividends. And you want sustainable dividends. And, of course, we know BHP is probably one of the best dividend payers in the world, and there's no reason to think that over the coming years it's not going to be able to sustain those dividends and possibly even grow them. We don't know what type of economic cycle we're in. It may very well be that we have a global recession, and you do see things like copper and iron ore demand drop a little. But just remember that these things are always going to be in demand. You know, if there's a recession, we're going to come out of this recession. It's very difficult to actually put new commodity producers out there. It is very, very expensive, very capital intensive. There's a lot of compliance. So it is very likely that the big guys, like Billiton, are going to be even bigger 3, 4, 5 years from now.
And interestingly, you know, getting out of oil, the Woodside deal, potash, and if you look at what's going on in the global fertilizer market at the moment, seems to be exactly where you want to be playing. In terms of the new look, rejigged BHP Billiton, do you think it's well positioned?
I think it's well positioned. I must be honest, I wasn't as anti-fossil fuels as a lot of people. You know, they probably went out. It's not exactly the correct time. But, you know, they are shareholder bound. You know, they've got large institutional shareholders. So really from a sustainability point of view, you know, it was a move that they had to make. So I think where they are at the moment, like I said, well-regarded shareholders seem to be on board, especially those activist shareholders, and they're in nice positions in the world, and like I said, commodities which are not going to go out of fashion. Yeah. You're not dealing with lithium here. You know, it's not going.
Absolutely, which has a lot of technology risk. If you look at the entry point, just lastly, in terms of valuation, what are we getting?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that's very, very difficult in the market now to call where the valuation is going to be. I would like to think, that's what I don't want to like to think, but I think quite possibly you're going to see more downside on a lot of these things, even on the commodity plays. But you've got to pay attention. Think about that dividend. You're not going to get this yield on anything else out there right now. You're going to wait a very, very long time for interest rates in the U.S. to actually get that high. So, yes, you can wait. Don't wait too long. Just concentrate on the long-term prospects and concentrate on that dividend yield.
Well, we certainly don't mind on this panel talking dirty and dirty fossil fuels. Greg, you've gone with XOP, the oil ETF. Just firstly, your thesis around oil currently, it has run very hard very quickly. What do you like about the oil market?
So, Michael, I think primary reason is that pre the invasion of Ukraine, Germany's oil imports were about 34% from Russia. They've got that down to about 10% now. It's highly likely that Europe, with one or two waivers for people maybe like Hungary, Slovakia, will put a ban on Russian oil. And I think it's that ban on Russian oil that will probably push up the Brent price closer back to 120, even 125 dollars. So, I mean, it could go even higher, but a European ban on Russian oil will force Russia over the next 2 years take it 1 to 2 million barrels of production offline, you know, so that will be, and nobody, as Carolyn said, with the fossil fuels, nobody is investing any money in new discoveries, and so that's why I'm quite still bullish on the oil price.
Yeah, the usual capital spending cycle seems to be somewhat broken because of the ESG drivers behind it. Generally, you would have a market that, you know, is undersupplied, you know, new supply is invested in, it takes a bit of time, that comes on, usually overshoots, it brings down the price, and so you've got this perfectly choreographed cycle of capital spending, and that seems to be largely broken thanks to ESG concerns. Tell me a little bit more about the SPDR S&P Oil and Gas Exploration Production ETF. XOP is its ticker.
Yeah, so that's, you know, gives you the explorers and producers of oil in the United States, and you can see it's quite possible that if the price remains high that you'll see fracking come back into fashion, the oil sands, and this gives you exposure to, so you're not taking single stock risk here with one of the oil companies, you're buying the basket, and as oil prices rise, as Brent will rise, so will West Texas, and these companies are generating a huge amount of cash, and dividends will flow quite strongly from these companies, so that gives you a diversified entry into an oil play directly.
What is the big risk here? Is it the fact that they are producing so much cash, like one of their oil gushers, that governments are just not going to be able to help themselves and slap a windfall tax on all of these companies?
Well, that is the problem. That will exacerbate the situation, in my view. The British government already talking about putting a windfall tax on the likes of BP. They've forgotten about the money that BP has had to write off on exiting Russia. They might have to write that down to almost zero. But it's not only in oil. In a lot of the commodity space, a lot of countries now, this resource nationalism is rearing its head again. I think it will just, the risk is that if that happens, there'll be even less willingness to explore for and demand. It's all very well to say the world must come off fossil fuels, but it's not something that can happen overnight. It takes years and years, and at the same time, you need to roll out your renewable energy, and that takes a lot of money and also a lot of time, and you need metals and minerals for that. So the risk for the oil price. On the downside, oil price, if you get some sort of, if China gets rid of the zero COVID policy, and also you find some sort of a ceasefire or negotiated settlement in the Ukraine, then that could be, the oil price could fall quite sharply, $20-$30 a barrel. But those two scenarios seem unlikely at the moment, and that's why I favor a higher oil price in the short and medium term.
Nick, first up, you've gone with another boring one, boring Glencore, you've called it. I don't know if that's a reference to the fact that Ivan Glasenberg has left and the days of Mark Rich and those types of stories are stories of yore. Why are you calling Glencore boring?
Yeah, I know. That was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek because, yeah, if you've ever read Mark Rich's biography, it's anything but boring. But went with so Glencore for me, Michael, was more along the lines of the commodity theme that you're looking for, and Greg and Caroline have spoken about. In Glencore's case, I like the fact that a large portion of their income and their revenues derived from the actual, let's call it inverted commas, the trading of these commodities. We've seen a huge uptick in volatility across that space, particularly the commodity space. You mentioned on the intro the likes of palladium and the different swings they've had. Glencore's teams sitting in Zug in Switzerland are absolute masters of taking advantage of this, and that's one of the reasons I like them. Secondly, of course, the commodity and the inflation story still running out. I like all those commodities as inflation is ticking up and staying sticky. Glencore's portfolio of commodities, I think, are nicely positioned to take advantage of it.
Potential risks to that scenario?
Potential risks, as the other panelists have highlighted, the fact that maybe there's a quick resolution to the war in Ukraine, the likes of the other big concern, I guess, is the dreaded stagflation or recession, the R word that people are talking about. At the moment, inflation definitely keeping commodities on the boil. But if we do get a dramatic slowdown, and we'll see that in the next couple of weeks with various GDP numbers coming out of the larger countries, that would be a concern to me. So that would be my risk, the risk that the global economy does slow more than we think.
And obviously, broadly, you know, if China remains on its zero COVID policy, that does remain something of an anchor on commodity prices overall. So it'll be interesting to see how China's response evolves, maybe after the big chinwag at the Chinese Communist Party's annual event at the end of the year. I know Xi's got one eye on that. Carolyn, turning to your second pick, the long-term growth VanEck Agribusiness ETF with probably one of the best tickers out there, Moo. what's moving you into the agri ETF space?
Okay, well, this is one of the alternate commodities. You know, people don't think of agriculture as being, a commodity, but it actually is. I like this ETF because it's very broad, you know, because agriculture is very broad. You know, this ETF, it feeds, it fertilizes agriculture, it's machinery. What is nice about this particular ETF, it's got 55 holdings, and not one of the companies there has got more than 10% in the fund. And that's quite important because this is quite a politicized industry, and all of these companies have had their ups and downs for whatever reason, so you don't want to be overexposed to an individual company. I think there are three things with the agriculture industry that I think really are going to drive growth in this sector phenomenally over the next few years. The first one is I try to think of it, it's almost like a technology industry. You know, we're seeing a technological revolution in agriculture that for us as consumers, we really don't see. And it's going to push food production. It's going to push the way we produce food. You know, even if you look at things like your veggie burgers, you know, things like it's everything is actually going to grow in the sector. Just a question of where, which comes back to what governments are actually going to spend on this sector. I think this Ukrainian crisis is really going to change the way food is produced around the world. It's going to be more localized, and also countries are going to look to have their food production sourced from countries that are friendly, you know, as opposed to something like a Russia or a Ukraine. And I think the third big driver of this is COVID shutdowns have shown that we are very vulnerable to logistics slowdowns and supply issues. So you are going to see a lot of development again on the localized agriculture. We cannot have a situation anymore where food is shipped, you know, halfway around the world.
Meatless meats and eggless eggs and all of those things that are driving the future of this. And as we've seen with the Russian war in Ukraine, 40 million people feeding 400 million people out of that region. Yeah. So all of this raises quite a compelling case to get into agri right now. What do you see as any potential downside risks for investors to be aware of with this ETF?
I think that the downside risk is that this is a politicized industry, and it's probably going to become more so because all of those push factors that I've raised. This sector is a little bit like the pharmaceutical company. You get accused of price gouging. We've already seen in the US, you know, Joe Biden's blaming the meat producers, you know, for a rise in inflation, whereas, you know, they've really got nothing to do that. Inflation is rising generally. So I think this is why I like an ETF. You know, so if, for example, Tyson Foods was targeted by the US government, you've got Biozita's there, and you've got another 50 companies there that hopefully aren't being targeted at the same time.
Yeah, it gives you that diversification. Even here, we've got the competition authorities raising a few eyebrows about edible oils at the moment. The last time I was in the shop, I just said to myself, that's it. I'm not going to be eating anything fried for the next few months. It certainly helps with that winter belly. Greg, you've gone into diversification big time as well, the XME Metals and Mining ETF. This really is a broad-based ETF. Talk to me a little bit more about the composition of this and what it's seeking to track.
Well, it seeks to track some of the, so when we come to my other pick, you'll see why I've chosen this one. It's basically producers of metals, steel, uranium. So that gives, and it's a US-based company, so it gives exposure to the US-based companies, where the other pick, so this would be excluding companies like Anglo American and BHP Billiton and Rio and Vale, and that gives you. But you know, America's steel is going to be important there for as they roll out their infrastructure spending, and also nuclear is the latest buzzword. So of course uranium plays a part in that. So it just gives you an exposure to that. But the point is that for investors to get some exposure to mining and metals, because I think we're only in the early stages of a multi-year uptrend for these commodities.
Interesting point. The cover of the FM 2 weeks ago said, is the party over for commodities? Very provocatively. Great cover. One of those office parties with cheap cups strewn over a table with the leftover wine and very cheap whiskey, it looks like. Is the commodities party over? What makes you believe that we're in a more structural upward trend here?
So I hope that the FM doesn't become like The Economist and a nice contrarian indicator with their covers. But I do believe that, so I think that the war in Ukraine has made it, there is no question about it that Europe has to divest themselves from being exposed to Russia in terms of its energy requirements. And they've been for a long time wanting to go for renewable energy. So they're going to throw trillions at renewable energy. It takes time, but it takes huge investments in metals. It was recently estimated that you require $240 billion of new mining investment. Now, that's not coming from, you're not going to see that. So it just, the supply demand dynamics will change again. And so why I think is that this time it's a supply problem. You don't have enough. And, the demand, you can say, well, if we're going to a recession, that demand will dip for a while, but as economies recover, demand will pick up. And at the same time, as demand picks up and you don't have enough supply and you haven't refreshed or replenished your supply, it can only lead to much, much higher prices. And the world needs, the United States has to spend plenty of money on infrastructure spending. China won't want to see its economy go off a cliff. You've seen they're making, reducing mortgage rates, but at the end of the day, they'll have to spend hard physical cash on getting the economy going. And I think metals and money, that will be extremely beneficial to that industry.
And if you want to root in, Nick, banking on Dr. Copper is probably a pretty good way to go as well, seeing how broad-based its usage is in the industrial economy. How have you targeted an entry point into Dr. Copper?
Yeah, nice follow-on from Greg as well. So absolutely, Michael, with copper, the ETF, I chose the copper ETF. Again, exactly what Greg and Karen have said, it's difficult for me to pick an exact a winner when it comes to particular mining shares. So the copper ETF takes care of that. It's about 30% the copper comes from the likes of the Canadian companies' exposure. You have a large portion of America, a large portion of China as well, about 6% coming from China as well. So it's all the copper producers. I like the copper story. There's a clear deficit of copper. If you listen to the rhetoric coming out of London Metal Exchange, their warehouses are nowhere near full. So I like the supply and demand side of copper. Simple, stupid, Michael. Easy to understand on that side. And not just used in Dr. Copper, not just used in housing, not just used in the pipes, used a lot in the new world we're heading into, this new paradigm of electric vehicles, alternative energy, the ECG we all mentioned on the show, big components of that. And in fact, copper is used almost three times more in a standard than a combustion engine that's used in electric vehicles. So I think it ticks all the boxes. And again, not clever enough to figure out which miner I like. So I like the copper ETF. COPX is what it's called.
COPX. There we go. I'm really excited because there's actually a new mining company that plans to list on the JSE. Imagine that later this year. Big Tree Copper Company. we might be talking about that on the show a little bit later on. Carolyn, your third and final choice is a SPECI on uranium, the SPEC Global Ex-Uranium ETF. Can't talk about nuclear in this country anymore because it just raises visions of the Guptas and Jacob Zuma. But really, it's something that we have to start taking seriously if we want to decarbonize the world.
Yeah. Look, it raises issues about the Russians and well in South Africa. So a year ago, you know, I was saying that sooner or later, there's going to be a realization that really it is nuclear has to be incorporated into a country's energy supply. You know, you cannot rely on fossil fuels anymore, and you also cannot rely on wind and solar. So this has become a fashionable trade since the Russian invasion of the Ukraine, and the ETF has actually risen by 15% this year. So if you're going to invest in it, I think because it is fashionable right now, you may want to wait for a better entry point. That said, the Ukrainian war is definitely going to accelerate the trends to actually find clean energy, clean alternative energy, and you're already seeing countries start to look at this, you know, very, very quietly so that they don't upset the eco-activists. But in reality, quietly, there are about 70 small module reactors being produced being built in various companies around the world. What I like about this ETF, it's not just mining. You know, the largest holding is Cameco Corp, which is 9% of the world's uranium, comes through this Canadian company. But what you will also find in this ETF, you're going to find heavy industrials like Mitsubishi, Hyundai, and Samsung. You know, the big industrials who are actually involved in some way with rolling out these big power stations.
Yeah, nuclear reactors, rolling them out. Often it must be added over time and over budget if you look at the experience in the market at the moment. As we're running out of time, Greg, your last pick is PIC, the ticker PICK, the mining and metals producer. What do you like about this?
Well, this is the global heavyweights. This is the Anglos, the BHPs, the Rios, the Vale. So this gives you the previous one, the metals and mining, is for U.S. exposure. This is global exposure. And as you know, BHP and Anglo, are diversified around the world, Latin America as well. That gives me a few sleepless nights now because of resource nationalism is really rearing its head. Latin America, but these are the global, as Caroline mentioned about BHP, you know, they said they wish they'd bought that potash business 2 years ago. They'd be doing $2 billion EBITDA now just from that. So as the world's food crisis continues to remain front and center, that will be pretty good for BHP, but Anglo as well, you know, got, if you want exposure to diamonds, they're the company that gives you that, but again, also involved in copper and nickel, and which will be required in renewables. So this gives you an exposure to global diversified mining companies without taking single stock risk.
Love it. Last one, we've got Exxon Mobil. Nick, what makes this an attractive way to invest in the oil patch?
So we all heard the reasons why we like oil, and in this particular case, why I think you should choose something like ExxonMobil as a company. It is an absolute giant in the oil space. If you saw what their latest set of results coming up to the 31st of March, that was released a few weeks ago, revenues up 52%, close on $57 billion in revenue. It's doubled its earnings per share. Look at the actual cash flow of this business and the return of what it's giving, dividend yield of about 4%. Not expensive, single digits, in fact, 13, 14 current PE, and you're getting an exposure to an absolute quality oil business. I also just wanted to add, when the reason I looked at the oil majors was the last couple of years, the oil has certainly been a little bit, I think, of a supply side sort of concern that's driven the prices up with the lockdowns of the last 2 years. What's become evident in the last couple of months as we've opened up is it's not only the supply side, it's certainly also demand driven as well.
Yeah.
And we haven't even got China opening up again. And our exposure to this and the easiest way for me and my firm to get exposure is through something like ExxonMobil.
And it was one of those majors that was continuing to invest in projects even while other majors weren't doing so.
Yeah.
And I think more than 90% of its upstream capital investments are expected to generate returns higher than 10% at Brent prices as low as $35 a barrel. And look at where the price is and what we've already discussed about the future trajectory. Well, there you have it. It's nine of the best to build a commodities fortress with XME, the metals and mining ETF. Add some boring Billiton for industrial diversification and boring Glencore for all of that trading as well. And seeing as BHP has ditched oil, we've got XOP, the oil ETF, and ExxonMobil. We've got the top pick mining and metals ETF, and we're moving into the agricultural commodity space with the long-term growth VanEck Agribusiness ETF, and we've obviously added good old Dr. Copper, and we're taking a real specky with the Spec Global X Uranium ETF. I've got a feeling we won't be getting into any ESG benchmarks with this lot.